Welcome to Greycast, exploring the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. This podcast is all about bringing the classic World of Greyhawk setting to life through Greyhawk creators, Greyhawk lore, Greyhawk streamers, Greyhawk stories, and of course, the vibrant Greyhawk community of gamers. Thank you for tuning in, and let the exploration of Dungeons & Dragons' most classic and revered setting, the World of Greyhawk, begin now.
All right, fellow Greyhawkians, we're back for another one, another episode of Greycast. The only, I think still the only podcast that deals solely with the original D&D world of Greyhawk. Welcome, friends. Hey, Mateus, how are you?
We're here. How about you?
I'm well. We're going to do a different thing tonight because we kind of like different things. You know, we're not real big on getting into too many ruts or routines or being too predictable, although we do need to work on that festival, fourth quarter festival episode.
I think that's the last one, isn't it?
It's got to be. We got to get that done because it's kind of that time of year. Yeah. So, but tonight or today or whatever it is, whatever time you are in at this very precise moment, we're going to review a book. And by review, it's not so much from a qualitative perspective, like, hey, this is really great, or hey, this is really not, because, you know, I don't know that we're qualified for all of that, but it's really more of a, here's what this is. And here's how cool of a resource maybe this could be.
How about we put a P in front of the R on review?
Preview.
There you go.
We're going to do a book preview. What's really fun and exciting about this is the author. Some guy named Robert Kuntz. You know, if you've been playing D&D since you were, you know, since the 80s or the 70s, you've probably heard of Mr. Kuntz. He was the kind of the protagonist to Gary Gygax. They were kind of partners in crime, the early, and by early I mean like back to Dave Arneson, Wargaming Table, and like Geneva days. I think Rob was Gary's DM for a time, and I think he's the creator of Robilar, I believe the character. But yeah, so this goes back a ways, and he has written an interesting little book that is available for purchase on his website, and we'll give you all the details at the end. But this is called The Red Book, Gargax's Glorious Gewgaws by Rob Kuntz. And so, Mateus, tell us, first of all, let's just do a quick, give us a quick rundown, a little bio. I kind of teased a little bit, but give us just a little bit of demographic information on who Rob Kuntz is.
Yeah, so I'm getting this from the man himself. This is what his own website says. So you can't get much better info about a guy than what he says. And also,
that seems pretty good, yeah.
And also, that ever reliable source called Wikipedia.
Yes, I mean, if it's on the internet, it has to be.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So I like how he starts out. Rob is the last designer standing. I like that. So he's one of the originals, the ones who began D&D, the founders of D&D, who were with Gygax and Arneson from the beginning, and had our part in that, and that means he is from Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, the home of D&D itself. He was born in 55, and in 68 he met Gary, And they were such good friends that Gary even considered adopting them at one point, it says here. So that's, it shows you what good friends they are or were. In 72, Gygax and Kuntz and others formed the or other members of the Lake Geneva Tactical Studies Association. Tactical Studies Association. TSA members were on hand for Dave Arneson's demonstration of his new fantasy game, Blackmoor, that he and his group of the Twin Cities had played in 70, made up, had been playing since 71. And that blossomed into the first commercial RPG, Dungeons and Dragons. So, and he has received awards and accolades. He has over 100 publishing credits to date, and his work has been translated into 20 languages. So he currently lives in Corsica, France, with his wife Natalie, and they have four kids. What are some of the things that he has done? He was a playtester for Chainmail. He was a playtester for the original primary playtester for the original D&D rules. He did Boot Hill as a playtester. He was a playtester for the Temple of Elemental Evil. For rules, the OD&D supplements Greyhawk and Blackmoor. He was a co-author for the Greyhawk supplement, and the developer and copy editor for the Blackmoor. He was the co-author for Deities and Demigods for supplement four. That was supplement four, or Gods, Demigods, and Heroes, I should say, to D&D. So he worked heavily on the original OD&D. Dungeons Master's Guide, non-credited contributor. And he was a co-author of Deities and Demigods. I'm trying to think of anything that our listeners would know.
Temple of Thrisdon, significant contributor there in Mordenkainen's Fantastic Adventure.
So, that's right. So he has Fatavistus co-author.
Expedition to Various Peaks.
Yep, that's, man. So some of these classics and then he's got some of his own stuff here. Castle Zagig, Dark Chateau, and he's got some his credit.
Pretty deep bibliography, if you will, or list of things. But to his credit. Yeah.
Those are gonna be the ones. And he's even been on the Lord Gazumba show. He has it listed there.
Yeah, yep.
He's been involved heavily in the original creation and development of D&D, and also it sounds like the Greyhawk setting. I like what Wikipedia says. They have a short summary of their first Blackmoor session. Gary, myself, and a few other local wargamers were the first, quote, lucky fellows from Lake Geneva to experience the rigors of Blackmoor. This idea caught on deeply with Gary after an exciting adventure in which our party of heroes fought a troll, were fireballed by a magic user, then fled to the outdoors being chased by the magic user and his minions, fought four Balrogs, followed a map to 16 ogres, and destroyed them with a wish from a sword we had procured from a hapless troll earlier. So that's a summary of the first session of Blackmoor.
Nice. So that's Rob Kuntz in a nutshell, a very, very small, quick 10,000 foot view of some of probably the most of what most of our listeners would be acquainted with and interested in. He's got credits across numerous different RPGs, publishing companies. If you want to see all of this, learn about it, visit his website, Three Line Studio, all spelled out, one word, threelinestudio.com. And there's a tab there called bio, and it's all in there. So he wrote this book. Let's jump onto this book here. The Red Book is kind of the pre-parenthetical title, if you will, Gargax's Glorious Gewgaws. I love the dedication right off the jump here. This work is dedicated to my old friend, co-designer, co-DM, and partner in creation, Gary Gygax. What he latched onto and rode like a bronco will never fade as long as there are people past, present, and future who actively support his literary legacy. So kind of a cool book, a little bit different in that really the contents are what make it different. It's completely a created piece that references many bits of inspiration, literary and film works that went into inspiring the creative part of this book. It's a book in two parts. The first section is a collection of kind of whimsical, unique magic items. You remember back in the day, Mateus, you know, when you had a unique magic item, it was an artifact, right? Teeth of Delvernar, Invulnerable Coat of Arnd, Hand Eye of Vecna, you know, Sword of Kos. I feel like that's kind of where he went with these, albeit maybe less hardcore D&D serious, but no less lethal and fun looking. I haven't done anything with this yet. I plan to in some of my games, because to me it's a great DM resource in addition to being just a really, really, really cool read from one of the original pioneers of D&D.
That's right. So this book, like you said, is answering the question, what is it? It is a book of magic items. That's what's going to be primarily useful for your in-game use. And then for your collectors and your the people who like getting behind Gary Gygax's head and seeing the influences, there's the second part of the book deals with some of the influences on Gygax, especially some of the influences behind some of the magic items, the old classic movies, and things like that inspired the items and also inspired Greyhawk, or Gygax and thus Greyhawk. And I think this is it. Let's take a 10,000 foot step back here for a second and see why this is important. And let me use a different fandom for a second to explain this. When Disney got a hold of Star Wars, they released a sequel trilogy, and it doesn't quite feel like Star Wars. But when they released The Mandalorian, it felt an awful lot more like Star Wars. Why? Because Favreau and Filoni knew the sources that George Lucas was inspired by to write Star Wars, and they used similar sources to make a show that feels like Star Wars. In the same way here, this book provides a few of the inspirational material behind Gygax, and if we can kind of get behind those, we can and pull on some of these things ourselves, we can make our Greyhawks feel more Gygaxian.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yep. Okay, so let's kind of dive into what the book is with maybe just some examples. He wrote one of the things I really like about this, there's a preface that Mr. Kuntz wrote. And the way I read this, I feel like I'm at his desk, at Kuntz's desk with him, having a coffee. It feels conversational. It feels like I'm getting this inside look behind the curtain, if you will. He sets the book up really nice in the preface, but he does this little special introduction to kind of set it off. So I'm just going to read a little bit of that. Special introduction to section one. The work's title, he's referring to the book. This work's title refers to both the entire work and to section one's gewgaws, G-E-W-G-A-W-S, gewgaws specifically. The magic items comprising section one of this work are dedicated to the memory of my mentor, co-DM and partner in design, Gary Gygax. So the story goes. The vast majority of the following magic items were created by a great artificer of magic known only as Gargax. Within one of his many abodes, a fortress surrounded by gray mists, he crafted many superior specimens of magic that he collectively referred to as his gewgaws. A very singular one, the Fare Thee Well feather, he discovered during one of his adventures, and he was never able to decipher its purpose. The wizard Gargax is rumored to have perished many years ago. His creations live on, even though they're often claimed to have been eclipsed by those who found his ways undecipherable. As will be noted below, at least in the case of several of these items, that Gargax had an almost magical proclivity for garnering the last laugh. I love it. And then it just kind of goes on to set up some general nature of some of the items. But I really kind of want to just maybe a couple of examples, Mateus, from the first section. He lists it by name and then a physical description, how do you activate it, right? So command word or whatever else must you know, take place in order to activate it, gives it kind of its range. But then he goes right into, you know, the features or the results, if you will, of deploying said magic item. And one of the really cool things about this is not only is it chock full of magic items that are intended to be unique, each has its own story with it, but in several occasions on these things, he gives you kind of an adventure hook connected to the item. So you can set the item in your game, or in the case of some of these, I kind of want to build a one shot around a particular item, I think is one way I'm going to approach this. So one of the ones I thought about was the Craven Raven. He refers to it in the preface. It has a strong tie in the inspirational content. So maybe we can just kind of talk about that one real quick.
All right.
The Craven Raven. DM note, right? This should be referred to as the Raven, so as not to foreshadow its flaws that are revealed during play. So this already gives you an idea. Just the craftiness and the just DM-ness. You know, like these aren't run-of-the-mill magic items. You know, it seems like this is a really cool thing, and then you use it and, well, things happen. The Raven is intended to be another of the figurines of wondrous power. It's onyx life-size statuette of a foot high raven. It talks about how the raven may respond if you ask it its name. Command word, very, very clever. I don't want to give up too much of this. Goes into how the thing can be summoned and used, you know, requires a cooling off period. Some traits of this thing: it remembers anything it hears and sees and can impart this information to its master, which is really handy, right? Now there is a 10% chance that something may be relayed incorrectly if the circumstances it witnessed or heard were malevolent or violent in nature.
That's right. So it has it this thing summons a raven that you can use for a time.
Yeah, it's you know, like a finger in a wondrous power. It basically becomes that. You activate it into the raven, and it's 24 hours or until killed. Has selective recall, as I mentioned, photographic memory for written materials. It's kind of self-explanatory. It can croak. And that has an impact of saving throws versus fear. What's interesting, however, is that saving throw versus fear must be made by its master and those friendly to its master. Mm-hmm. So hence the craven. You know, it's a little bit, I wouldn't say it's a cursed magic item, but it isn't exactly what it appears to be necessarily, or what one might hope. However, enemies of the Raven's Master are also impacted by this. There's a 50% chance if you use it once a week for scouting, it may find a trinket while out on its travels. 50% chance of that happening. But not just a trinket, but he's got it in here like 100 to 600 gold piece value trinket. And you know, in the DMG in fifth edition, there's a whole section, I think it's in the DMG, on trinkets, right? Baubles and things. And I mean, you get into 100 to 600 gold pieces, perhaps it finds another magic item, you know. So
dude, this thing is in old school systems where gold coins are experience. Can you see some?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Dude, some of the players trying to use this to try to, I'm just going to send it out to get trinkets so I can get gold and experience. Oh, look at that. Exactly.
There's a million ways to be creative with this. It does have some flaws that make this an interesting, very flavorful magic item. Cowardice. Unsolicited counsel that's typically kind of dumb or really off point or even contrary to what the party, you know, has as a mission. Confrontation avoidance. Really, really cool stuff. So we'll talk in the second section here about, I think it'd be important for us, Mateus, to tie it to its inspiration in the second part of the book so you can kind of see how that works. But that's an example of one of the magic items. So again, these are all intended to be unique artifacts, if you will. But think of, with all the detail and so forth, think of the lore you could tie to this. Maybe the Raven, belonged to someone. At some point, and you found it. It could be something like that. Could be just a random thing found in a treasure hoard on an adventure. The DM could just drop it in there. Or again, you can tie it to very specific lore. But either way, it's a really cool item. And you can probably, as the wielder, the owner, becomes attuned to this. Again, if you're playing fifth edition, learns the powers of this thing, you could maybe have a little fun with them and, you know, have those powers and traits reveal themselves in interesting ways, so that perhaps the owner or the party doesn't even realize that it's coming from the Raven. So really, really just a really cool example of one of the numerous gewgaws, if you will, these doodads, these artifacts. Mateus, did you have one you wanted to? The book also contains, as we're going through this, artwork illustrations of each of the items. Very, very simple. Has a very basic edition type artwork feel to it when they give an illustration of each of the items. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, so it's a very old school feeling book in that regard, but it wouldn't be really difficult to tie it mechanically to 5e if you wanted to. Like that's what I would do. Okay, so that's the Raven. Let me get one that has a, because some of these have like an adventure hook. Okay, so here's an interesting piece. We'll do one more magic item here.
Let's do one more.
Grigbison's Gamut. It's a one-handed battle axe. Finely crafted battle axe. The handle is inlaid with crushed emerald depicting intertwined dragon wings. Has the boomerang ability of a dwarven thrower. Remember that old bad boy?
I love that idea because think it's like Thor's hammer in or his axe in the movies there, the Avenger movies. He throws it and it comes back to his hand. And I think that's just, and it's plus, did it say it's plus three, which is just ridiculous. It's,
yeah, way it's plus three dwarven thrower. So you have to have a 15 or greater strength to wield it in combat. And it lists the penalties you would have if you don't have that. It's D12 damage or when hurled, or double that in melee, hand-to-hand combat, and it's an additional D12 versus evil dragons. And its possessor can understand, and he refers to the Saurian language, S-A-U-R-I-A-N. I'm going to guess that's a form of Draconic from, you know, old school AD&D days. That one escapes me. So this thing, on top of all that, it creates images, and the images will do things and command you to do things and make demands of you. Where is it? I'm trying to figure out. It's not clear in here how we get. Oh, I know what it is. The battle axe I'm reading about is actually an image from inside another magic item. I jumped ahead and didn't catch what I was doing. The gamut, Grigbison's gamut, is one of eight, I believe it's eight, items tied to images that appear inside. It's eight inside the. Hang on, I'm scrolling up. Inside this item, the globe of eight. Okay, so I made a mistake there. The gamut, Grigbison's gamut, is one of eight items/images that appear inside or from the globe of eight. A foot round milk glass globe with small cut and fitted circular piece of transparent glass at its bottom so that it could be set on steady surfaces, right? Mm-hmm. Beneath the glass are what appear to be water bubbles, and floating upon these is a white circular plate of unknown composition inscribed with the following sentence in black letters. Turn and shake. What does that remind you of?
Absolutely. It's Magic 8-Ball.
It's Gygaxian Magic 8-Ball. Yeah. And so when you turn and shake, you get all of these different images. And that's where I do apologize for the confusion. That's how I arrived upon Grigbison's gamut. If you get image five when you turn and shake it, this hefty fighter with a balding pate and a long brown beard has a battle axe and a kite shield, and, you know, he appears. And the battle axe is the gamut that I just described to you. So, oh, golly, I do apologize for the confusion on that. So that's just one image that will appear if you turn and shake this globe of eight. And he calls it a special artifact. I think all of these are special artifacts. DMs should be cautious regarding its placement in their campaigns and are encouraged to set other parameters regarding its use that have not been suggested. In other words, use at your own discretion. You're going to break your game with this item, is how I'm reading that.
That's right. And there are so many, and these are just a couple of the and that's the one, that's just one of the images, eight images in the Gygaxian 8-Ball. And there are others, and there are other items that are, there's a few in here that I think would be very good in the kind of Rovers of the Baron, maybe
some place way out of the way. Like, yeah, I'm where thinking, on earth did this come from? Yeah,
yeah. I'm thinking Rovers of the Baron. There's a few items that go in the Rovers of the Barons. Some over in the Bakunish areas. Maybe Ull. There's a few of those in there. Kind of exotic. Some maybe from beyond the Flannis. It looks like if you were to put them in the Flannis.
That's the thing with they can come from anywhere.
That's right.
They can. I mean, come that's from, extra planar. You know, that's the thing I like about this. or you can tie them to lore. I want to flip to section two because we promised ourselves we weren't going to make this into a monumental congressional act type episode here. And section two, it says some influences related. I mean, we would never do a thing like that. Some influences related to EGG, I'm assuming that's E. Gary Gygax, in creating and playtesting D&D. And so I want to scroll down to a thing called The Raven, a 1963 film that apparently was one of Gary's favorites in the genre. And I'm assuming it's a horror, like an old, you know, classic horror film. Here's what I love about this book. Its influences on D&D were wide and include the magic missile and shield spells for supplement number one to D&D, Greyhawk. I mean, talk about foundational influence, right? Magic missile, the fireball and animate objects spells from Greyhawk 1, and polymorph self and other, and polymorph other object. And then he talks about the dueling wizards, Vincent Price playing the Craven, and Boris Karloff playing Scarabus, all the different forms of magic. Mind control, speaking with the dead. So he sees this as a huge source for D&D spells. And so that magic item, right, that we talked about a little while ago, the Raven, he pulled and was inspired by that movie, The Raven.
You see also, I like that next, he mentions next Zagig and Rollabar and how the Raven relates to the 13th level of Greyhawk Castle, which is neat.
Yeah, and the fact that the Raven, the movie, was a farce. It was a spoofer, horror spoof comedy. And that hits, I guess that's kind of, you know, again, I don't know Gary Gygax, never met him, but apparently that was a big part of his humor. He liked his cheese. You know, he liked that kind of spoofy farce humor.
Yeah. And so, and that's just one of the several sources and perhaps another one that I would, one of the sources that I want to talk about is the Golden Voyage of Sinbad. That's one of those awesome old stop animation movies. Some of the, you know, the things it fights are stop animation from 74. Even though it comes after the release of D&D, it influenced some of the supplements. Eldritch Wizardry, the supplement for the OD&D. Gary's idea of a lesser god, it comes from that. There's some other under this section, some other neat personal info about Lake Geneva, which is really, you know, some cool information there. And the six-armed Kali concept was really cool. And it was an inspiration for Hextor, which is just, you know, fascinating. This movie, 1974 movie about Sinbad, is an inspiration for the sixth arm Hextor. So that's pretty cool.
Well, and if you look at the art that he includes in here, the art for the original Demon Type 5, mm-hmm. the bare-chested female clutching all the different swords, falchions, with the serpent's tail. There it is. Yep. You know, so again, another example of the, and you can see the statue. He includes through the book some snapshots, like stills of some of these movies, And right above it, you can see Sinbad and company. And then there's a stone version of the statue before it animates. Just tremendous. It's just so cool to see where D&D came from. Get a peek into Gary's mind through Rob's recollection. Just super cool. Super cool.
Yep, that's right. In total, the book is about 40 pages. So it's not a big read. I believe it's not a physical book. It's going to be a PDF that you can download and use in your game. Yeah.
Threelinestudio.com. And I was looking at this before we got started, and I think it's like $8. I mean, it's like not going to break the bank that I saw on his website.
That's right.
So very, very cool resource in addition to just being a neat read, just a cool bit of D&D lore and Gygaxian lore.
And you should check out some of the other stuff he's got there. This is and there's volume 2 of the Red Book, Price's Price. So there's a sequel to this book,
right? And he also mentions the fact that he wants to write a book with some adventures in it. There's some right proper hooks sprinkled throughout this book that a crafty DM could, you know, turn into something cool. But yeah, he has more to come, if you will.
That's right. And so there's some digital, digital releases here, Return of Rollabar, all sorts of things that you can get on this website. And this book is just the tip of the iceberg. These items are all useful. They all start sparking the imagination. They start getting the years going. They're full of what I've heard called game juice.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to, so as we wrap this thing up, right, we're getting to the end of this episode. Very, very cool. We want to thank Rob for giving us the review copy, by the way, to do this. I want to read a paragraph that's at the very back of the book that when I read it, I had to pick myself up off the floor. I love this. Love, love, love it. And I'm just going to take it right out of context, but it's just kind of in the wrap up. And it goes like this. This also exposes both Gary's and my own proclivities for creating campaign content. Our rule of thumb: never, ever flesh out the full adventure beforehand, as it may be ignored due to the whims of the players. Hook them first. Get them invested in the hook as you invest in expanding the story behind it. Flesh it out and keep it engaging as you move through its parts with the players. This requires a steadfast positioning of prototype design thinking as you work toward completion. It also requires keeping the players engaged through immersive matter, since bored players will soon move away from your budding masterpiece. So this notion of Grognardian DMing, where I'm the DM and that's how it's going to be, I give you that little paragraph right there. And that tells me that is not what was intended by the creators of D&D. You know, they wanted it to be a collaborative storytelling process that the narrative unfolds at the table in real time. And I love that. That's why I like to play D&D. I read that and I was like, you know, because you hear nowadays, right, in these here modern times, all these 5e players barking about how old school D&D was too, what's the word, railroady, you know, grognards want to control everything. I mean, if that's the style you like at your table to do that and have the DM do that, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great way to play. But I love that Kuntz has, this exposes both Gary's and my own proclivities for creating campaign content. And then he explains it. We want you to evolve it at the table as a team, as a group, keep them invested, keep them engaged, and don't write it all out, because they're probably going to miss half of it, because they're all going to go, hey, well, look, is that a shiny thing behind that tree over there? And that'll be the one thing you don't have any backstory on. You've not written it. You accidentally described it. And that's what they're going to follow. But the 85 pages of text that you wrote, gone.
Gone.
Love yep. that. Love it. Love it. Love it. So very, very cool there. That was a neat little nugget that jumped off the last page at me.
That it'd be awesome to have an episode of adventure Greyhawk adventure design by Rob Koontz. That would be fantastic. Here's one of the guys who created D&D
with Gary and the DMD Gary.
Yeah, and who's you know, here's how, you know, he says here's how you should his perspective on creating campaign content, on creating adventure hooks and how to use them, and this idea, like, this requires a steadfast positioning of prototype design thinking. I want to say, unpack that whole phrase. Lay it out. What do you mean? That you know, I know what he means, but I want him to.
Yeah, I'd like to hear it from him. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. More stuff like that is in this book. This is a
it's a really cool piece. There's a couple of adventure hooks, one of which is kind of tied right to Through the Looking Glass, just above this. So he drops a couple of nice little gems at the end as far as setups and hooks for adventures. So I love this book. His wife helped him on the cover design and the layout of the book and the editing. So that's, you know, to me, it's, I feel the kind of the wistfulness, the, you know, the look back from Koontz, you know, the nostalgia, if you will, that the sentiment of their time together. And, you know, having been fortunate enough to finally visit, Lake Geneva, this kind of completes that experience for me of understanding what D&D was all about in the early days. So very cool piece. Again, the Red Book, Gargax's Glorious Gewgaws. Threelinestudio.com is the website. It's Rob Koontz. So you know it's tremendous. And who knows, maybe we can attract Rob to our humble little podcast here one day, and Mateus, you can ask him about that paragraph and ask him to expand on that. God, that would be tremendous. So any last thoughts, man?
No, go support Three Line Studios and Mr. Koontz, and have a hell of a time with it.
Just tremendous. Very, very, very nice book. Okay. Well, we'll see you all out there on the adventure trails, you know, hill and dale and all of that sort of thing. Be nice, be kind, and be safe. And until next time, we'll see you.
You've been listening to the Greycast Podcast, where we explore the world of Greyhawk one podcast at a time. Mateus and I are excited to share our passion for the world of Greyhawk with each of you. We'll drop episodes every other Monday featuring all things Greyhawk. Please refer us to all your cool, nerdy Greyhawkian friends and allies, even your most hated enemies at the gate. You can find our podcast on Spotify, and be sure to give us a follow on Twitter @Greycast576 to keep up with Greycast. Until next time, remember, it's a dangerous business going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no knowing where you might be swept off to.